Welcome to the Missio Dei podcast. Missio Dei is a family of Jesus, joining God as he makes all things new in Chicago. Check us out online at missiodeichicago.com.
I want to say good morning to you, Missio Dei. I love that your name actually means motion, the mission and the sending of God, that you're not stationary folks, that you're people on mission, that you're people who are moving, you're people being sent by God into the world around us. So I want you to know that I'm here today really on two fronts, and I will use your pastor's words for that. I've been invited to fulfill two tasks for you today. Number one, to give your pastor a break, to celebrate the daughter's graduation with her family. Sometimes I like to call that Pastor Appreciation Sunday because you'll appreciate the pastor more after I've spoken at the church. The second is that I'm here because she asked for me to speak something to you about hearing God's heart for justice from someone who tries to translate it into real life action every day in our city, especially a church that you've had a partnership with through the years. That's not an easy feat, but I think you've seen that even in the scriptures that I've read. So why did I give Shannon this huge task of two large sections of scripture when I hear your average is maybe three or four verses? I just thought Shannon did a great job reading, though, didn't you think? Give her applaud for that. Yeah, good job. But the reason that I shared this passage is because with the second request of your pastor, she wanted me to talk about God's justice in the city. And these are two passages of scripture that talk to us about God bringing justice into a city. These are two great cities of the Bible. I mean, Jerusalem, you know, of all places, and then Athens. And they both, in these two passages, experience God's justice being proclaimed to them as a city. So we sometimes think about the personalness of our faith, but there's a part of our faith that's impacted by the place where we are, the work that God's doing in a place or isn't doing in a place. So I want you to know that first, I have given your pastor a break, and second, I'm here to give you God's heart for justice, and you've heard not just one church in one city, but now two churches in two cities. So I think I've finished my job, and I'm over-delivered to you what I said I would do. So thanks, and have a great day. Not fun passages, but I do want to unpack those a little more. Maybe this is icing on the cake for you, because I really couldn't decide between these two because they both speak so strongly to me of God's heart for justice for cities. The people of God in a city should be serving their immigrant brothers and sisters, especially when society is sending them a very different message, like you are not welcome here and you do not belong in this space. When in fact, God could have brought them here, and I believe he did, to help others know about him. And what I mean by that is that God brings people here, and it says in Acts that we just read, so that people will know him. He'll move them about so that they'll know him. And that may mean that the people that have come here from some places have a vibrant faith, and I've met some of them. They blow me away by their faith. And I believe that their faith is helping others' faith across the city. And sometimes people come here and have never met a Christian in all of their life. And their first encounter of that is actually meeting someone that we're welcoming. And people are volunteering to help with their needs. So I think these are things that we do. And I believe that the Bible teaches this. I believe first that the Bible teaches that we should have a heart of compassion for those who are in vulnerable spaces. That's how God has made us. Secondly, we should work to fulfill our commission that all people everywhere would know him. And third, that we should live a life in community with others because we are all made in the image of God. When we think about God's heart for justice portrayed in these two cities, though, we see both. We see a call of compassion for the present people in the city of Jerusalem who are in vulnerable spaces. And we also see this call of commission from Paul in Athens for all people everywhere. So I want to go a little deeper with you to help you better understand God's heart for justice in just these two cities at a particular time and place. In Jerusalem, we have a prophet. The prophet here is Ezekiel, and he's talking about the walls that surround a city. Now, that, I know that's a flashpoint when we talk about walls being put around a place, but these walls weren't built by a country, and they weren't built by a leader. This wall is a wall that is built by God himself for the righteousness of its people when they stand up for the vulnerable. Instead of trying to kick them out or profit from them, these are people who are caring for others, and their righteousness forms a wall of protection around a city. When God sees all levels of society, though, that are failing at this basic task of showing compassion for those who are in vulnerable places, he is ready, as we see in Ezekiel, to condemn that city and its people for their neglect of those who are hurting or whose voices are muted. Then we turn to Athens. In Athens, you have the Apostle Paul being judged himself by the city for introducing them to foreign gods. This accusation was worthy of death because we know that one of the first death sentences that happened in the Areopagus was actually Socrates in 399 BC because he was trying to bring foreign gods into the city. So Paul has to begin his words by countering that he's not bringing foreign gods. There's already a statue of the god that he's worshiping in that space, but it's one that they don't know about, that they're ignorant of him. And so he's not a foreign god. He's a god that they've given a statue just to cover their bases with all the hundreds of statues. Let's give one for the god we don't really know anything about, but there's probably one that we don't. And we want to make sure we have a statue for them. And now he wants them to know who, this is Paul saying this of Athens, he wants them to know who this God is and how he is at work among them. He's determined the times and places that they live so that they would seek him and others might find him, though he's not very far from any one of us. Bottom line, in Athens, God, he's telling the people, God puts people where they are so they'll know him. That's very important for us to realize when we talk about displacement of people. When I started with World Relief, we were serving around 65 million people globally who were displaced. Last year, that reached 129 million people over the past decade. So right now, God is moving, and I would say he's redeeming the moving, because evil is really what causes people to be displaced. But God's redeeming that in some way by moving a lot of people around with the caveat that they might know him. God's redeeming that displacement, that pain, that suffering that brings me to tears when I see it. But he's doing something to redeem that, and I believe he's doing that so people will know him better in some way through that circumstance. So I want us to look more closely, though, at these two cities, just to go a little bit deeper. In Jerusalem, we see the walls of the land that are crumbling because of the sins of the moral failings of the city, and it's destroying their city because vulnerable people are being left unprotected. And in Jerusalem, we see that the Lord was looking for people at all levels of society who would stand in the gaps for those who are vulnerable. And so this is a great sermon outline. It could have been just a sermon of itself, because he mentions all these levels of society that were neglecting the vulnerable. He starts out when it says that God looked to the princes. This would be the rulers of the land. He was looking to those that might be the ones to make decisions about things. And what he finds is they're not really standing up for the people who have needs among them. And then it says, but God looked also to the princes. And then the priests followed from that. And he looked to those priests. And what did he find about them? They also were not speaking up. They were not telling truth. They were not living out their faith with their actions matching their words. He then looked to the city leaders. So these are the Mayor Johnsons of our day. And he wants to see what they were doing. And what he sees here is that there are people who are just trying to make a lot of money off of others. They're abusing their position of power. And then he goes to say, God then looked to the prophets. And what did he find among them? They claim to be giving God's truth and supporting all of these actions that you see, but they really hadn't heard anything from God. So they were in their falsehood covering up what was going on within the city. And it says, then finally, this was true even of the common people of Jerusalem at the time. And what did he find among them? They were not caring for those around them, so much so that orphans were being neglected and foreigners were not being given justice. And he sees all of that, and he says, I didn't find one person in the city that would stand up for them. Not one. Not just a few. No one. No one stood up. So God said to that city, I will pour out my fury on them, consuming them with the fire of my anger, and I will heap on their heads the full penalty for all of their sins. I think of several populations in Chicago that are in similar situations today. And these are not popular ones with us today. Asylum seekers, they're people who've arrived here on buses. They were given a court date, which meant they had a legal reason to be present here if they could prove that there's credible threat to their life, and then they would be given the opportunity to stay. These are people from, as you've had in your own building, from Venezuela and other parts of Central and South America. Then there are those who have temporary protected status. There are people that have come from places like Haiti and from Afghanistan who faced unsafe conditions that threatened their life because of earthquakes or political instability, and they now are losing their status and being asked to return to the places where they felt those threats. A third would be people who are humanitarian parolees, according to our legal systems. And we have one of our legal staff here, so help correct any of this along the way in the back desk if I miss anything here that's not correct here. Humanitarian parolees are those who are given a temporary status here, like people who came here from Ukraine during the war. And now they're finding that those paroles are being revoked, that they're not allowed to stay, that they need to leave this space. And then most recently, that would also include refugees, because people like those from Myanmar who have been in our city and in Minneapolis are being asked to be re-interviewed because the present administration doesn't see the previous administration did a very good job. And yet people have been here for years and now may be losing their status from this space. Must all of them leave? Is there something right about every one of them leaving? I ask you why. Okay, one sense of justice, an Old Testament. You could say, oh, that's the hard stuff. How about the New Testament? Let's look at the city of Athens. We have a very different story there. We don't have a prophet speaking. We have this time an apostle speaking. It's the apostle Paul. And he's continuing all these multiple journeys that he's on, telling other people about Jesus. And he sees that in this great and mighty city that he's in, that it's absolutely full of idols. Lots of other things that are more important than God in the city where he is visiting, including seeing one of an unknown God, a temple that was there, an idol that was there, in case they missed something, as I mentioned. In Athens, Paul makes a defense for the Christian faith, talking about God in some unique ways that are different for the people that are there. He says this about their place. This God that I'm telling you about, this unknown God, is the maker of heaven and earth. So he was the one who made it. And he doesn't need a temple. Now, in Athens, he's saying this, realize this. He's saying in a city full of idols and full of temples, he's saying, you know, the God I'm going to tell you about doesn't even need a temple to be built for him, because in fact, he has no needs that anyone needs to tend to, because he made us all. We are made by him, and he made all the nations. And then he says something really peculiar among the strange things that he says. And he determined the times and places that they live so that they will know him. Now, if you think about Athens, was a city where people moved in and out all the time. He was saying, you know, you're not here by mistake. You're here because God brought you here. And I don't know if all of you are natives. I think hearing Sam's accent a little bit, I'm sure you are not originally from this space. Probably moved in, right? Yeah. I have my accent. You probably are hearing mine. Some of you have your own accents. We move around, and we're in a city, a global city, where people move around. Last year, we welcomed people from 95 nations in our work through World Relief. So people are moving around. And I believe he's moving them around so they'll know him. There's something God is doing that is redeeming that evil, because he's not very far from any one of us. So get this. God did not cause evil, but he's redeeming it by putting people in proximity to one another so that they can know him. And I want to just give you a few examples of that that I've seen over the past 10 years in Chicagoland, just working with World Relief. The first would be the Bhutanese Nepali community, a group of people who are stateless by background, according to the United Nations, and their stories are legendary. Within the past 5 years now, they have seen four generations of Christianity formed among that group of people. I met people in that community who had never met a Christian in their life, and they have come to follow Christ, and they have a grandfather who is in his 80s, a witch doctor by background, who's followed Christ. Now there's a youth group among this group of people, and now they're sharing their faith with others. So there's this four-generation movement of Christianity that's happening among a group of people who are some of the most unreached of the world, less than 3% Christian. And I think about the people who've been a part of that, a gentleman named Amos who went to be with the Lord last year, and a guy named Ganesh that works on my staff that actually has written the first manuals that are ever used on how to reach a population of people like this that have been from their place that don't know anything about Christ. Then I think about the Ukrainian community that's come here. War causing that, displacing numbers of people. After New Jersey, Chicago was second largest in the United States. 34,500 people approved to come to this country, to this city. They didn't all come, but that many were approved to come here. So we did what we do with World Relief, and that is we work with churches. So we pulled together every Ukrainian church in the city that we could find to say, you're going to be welcoming all of these people. How can we help you as a church? We hosted a lunch, and we found 27 churches across the region that had ties to Ukraine. Some of them came from the end of World War I and were here. We have a community called Ukrainian Village that happens because of that. So there's this whole history there with them. 4 years later now, with those that we've served, we now have not 27 churches in Chicagoland. We have 42 churches that speak their language, Slavic churches, Ukrainian-focused churches that have birthed. And I could name people like Sergei and Eugenia who helped them and planted churches among them as they were helping them here in the Chicagoland area. And then I think about what's a new generation of that that's just happening for me in the past month or so, and that is a group of people who are Africans that have come here through the year, African diaspora people, because of ethnic strife and climate change and challenges within their own lands. And now there are over 120,000 people who are part of that diaspora that are here in the Chicagoland area. And if you think about it in terms of a mission agency, one church for every 500 people, that would mean that we would need 240 churches just for that population alone. So far, we found maybe two dozen. We're looking to see if there are others, just to see what our need is in terms of people speaking this language. Now, I know I'm getting into the mission weeds here, but trust me, I'm a 40-year missionary, so this is my heart. This is where I come from. And I think about Lawrence and Emmanuel, who are people that are doing that kind of work right now and actually looking for other partners that might help. So here you see two cities. You hear a missionary or an apostle, and you hear a prophet speaking words of justice on those cities. I believe that God wants you and I to understand what he's doing in cities these days. There is a work that God is doing in Chicagoland. We may not fully understand it. We may not see it all, but there's a work that he's doing. And that includes people who are disadvantaged because of loss of wealth, loss of a spouse, loss of parents, loss of a homeland. If you think about it, the Bible uses these words, the poor, the widow, the orphan, and the stranger. And that's part of the quartet of the vulnerable that God cares about in a city, just like he cares about you and I. And he wants you and I, as he says in Ezekiel, to stand in the gaps for them. And when we don't do it, it disturbs the Lord. So as a church, you have stood in this space with the vulnerable as you've welcomed people here or strangers in your building, sharing and showing them the love of Christ. At World Relief, we're committed to facing these great humanitarian crises of the world, but we do that in partnership with churches like yourself. Matthew 25 tells us that when we care for people in hard places, he says we're actually caring for him when we do that. So personally, I want to ask, what about you? What part are you playing in this ministry of caring and sharing God's love for all people? Some have stood in the gaps before you to try to prevent this from happening. If you think about it, Moses spoke for his people in the desert in Psalm 106, basically trying to protect his people who were displaced. And he cared so much for them, they wanted to get them to a safe house, to be in a safe place. Ezekiel, we saw, spoke up for the vulnerable of his city. Jesus spoke up for us, though we were condemned, and gave a help to us to make us right with him. He stood in the gaps for you and I so that we might be his children. And he calls us to speak up for strangers, to stand in the gaps for them. They stood in the gaps. What about you? We invite you to continue this kind of hospitality of welcome in three very practical ways. The first is to meet vital needs. The people that we serve need help getting on their feet. They need legal help to become citizens of this country. They need to learn to speak the language. They want to find a good job. All of these are made possible because of your generous giving to World Relief. Would you continue to give? Would you continue to be a generous part of that? Most of those public dollars have gone away internationally and locally, which means the church, if these are things that we believe are true, we would want to support those kinds of efforts. So I would encourage you to think about how you might give in these ways. They also need a friend. They need someone, we call them friendship partners or good neighbor teams, who will come alongside them and say, you are welcome here and you do belong. You are a part of what God is doing in our midst. You can also serve them in really practical ways. I have Raina in the back who'll have a booth where you can pick up any of this information. You could help out as a tutor with English tutoring. You could help out as a transportation assistant, just getting people from one place to another. You could help out as a health advocate, needs for health needs among those that we're serving, getting them to get good medical care. Or you could serve even in a summer club. We have summer clubs, and Raina actually is helping coordinate those. And we need volunteers who'd give a day or a week or multiple weeks to work with children here in the city. These are some of the ways that you can be a friend. But thirdly, they need your voice because their voices today are muted. We have ways that you can advocate for these policies. That's why I invited Raina. She helps in those opt-in ways that you can provide a voice for just policies, but also to take justice actions. Maybe there are things that you'd want to do to try to help support. One of those newest things we're doing is now court accompaniment. And so when someone's doing their check-in on citizenship, we don't really come as a legal representative. Notice I'm good caveat with that with our legal rep back here from our office. But we are there to say, we are here for you in their visit, in their court date. So I want to know whether you might want to speak up or to take these justice actions. Bottom line, here's what I'm saying about both of these cities. May our city not go the way of these, whether that be an Athens or a Jerusalem, but instead that we would stand in the gaps for those who are in vulnerable spaces, that we would share and show the love of Christ to them in very profound and very practical ways. So what is your next step? What is the thing God would want you to do?
Thanks for tuning in. We'd love to keep the conversation going. Find a weekly gathering or gospel community in a neighborhood near you. To find out more, check us out online at missiodechicago.com.